Good morning. A few weeks ago, I was really in my feelings about all the news. And I looked up from doom scrolling through the news on my phone and looked at my kids and was just struck by the contrast. And this poem popped into my head, pretty much fully formed, as they do sometimes. And it made its way to Amy, and she asked me to share it today. So here it is. I empty the trash as the world burns. I do the dishes as the world burns. I make dinner and dinner and dinner and endless snacks as I listen to a Palestinian father sob as he tells how his small son starved in Gaza. I sweep the floors as rebels are murdered in prison and a criminal runs for president against the other one who funded genocide and could have codified Roe but didn't. As the world burns, I hold my babies close as other mothers bury theirs. I'm so grateful I can tell my scared daughter the truth that she's safe in her bed, where elsewhere in the world I might have to lie. What do I tell my children as the world burns? And I take out the trash and I make them pancakes. What do I tell my children about this time when the world is burning? But we have chores to do and school to attend. What do I tell my children about all the dead babies and the bombs and the burning? And who do I vote for when everyone has blood on their hands? What do I tell my daughters when they wonder why they aren't actually in charge of their bodies, even though I told them that from infancy? What do I tell my son when he wonders what I did as the world burned? I took out the trash. I swept the floor. I made you dinner, even as food is ash in my mouth, as I picture other mothers and fathers scouring the markets of Gaza for one half-rotten pomegranate that still isn't enough. Nothing is enough. And I still have to do the dishes. Thank you.
Sometimes I feel like I'm standing on a threshold with the whole world, and there's a doorway open in front of us, and we can't see what's beyond. And as we heard John O'Donohue say, I feel some long-enduring winter mentality beginning to loosen in us all. I feel ourselves becoming vulnerable to a flourish of possibility. And suddenly, or maybe not so suddenly, we are negotiating the challenge of a threshold. That maybe it's true that things get worse before they get better, and we have to keep moving. There's this unfortunate thing about me, a part of my DNA or my personality, that's often troublesome. I can think I'm fine for a really long time before I realize I am not fine at all. I can go along in life like all is well and everything is normal until all of a sudden I realize it's actually falling apart and I have to make a change. I can stand in the center of an open doorway and believe that just being there is good enough, close enough. I don't actually have to walk through, I can just enjoy the view. Sometimes, though not often, and I don't recommend it, I really do need someone to push me through the doorway. There's a mug on my desk downstairs that I got for Christmas from a minister's daughter, who I'm guessing has her own knowledge of this. But the mug is meant to be funny, though I wonder if I should point it out during meetings as the true warning that it is. Printed on the walls of the mug are the phrase, "Be careful, or you'll end up in my sermon." And it's true. So, with permission, I need to tell you about this recent conversation that was held in the presence of that mug and that changed something in me. One among us asked me for a meeting recently. It happens all the time, of course, and sometimes I know what we'll be talking about. Sometimes I'm surprised. This time, I had an inkling, but I still wasn't at all prepared for the firm, yet gentle, direct, yet respectful, absolute calling out, butt-kicking I received. Over the course of this meeting, my own words were remembered to me. The readings and videos and sermons and classes I've offered were named and recalled. Comparisons to other ministers and other congregations were lifted up. Our UU values were cited, worth and dignity, the goal of world community with peace, liberty, justice for all, our interconnection to one another. This person shared her disappointment and her hopes, tying it all to who we say we are as Unitarian Universalists and her understanding of what it means to be a minister. And no quarter was given for the ways that I have fallen short in the work of living into my responsibility and my power as a person and as a minister as it relates to the deafening silence around the horror in Gaza. If I'm really honest, that conversation was horrible. And I'm still recovering, because I love, respect, and admire this person, and I know that they love and respect me. And even if in its harshness, the conversation was held in the light of that respect and care, and that's why it worked, I imagine. And that's why I can share this story with you, knowing that she's already seen it, knowing that I received her blessing to talk to you all about it. During and after that talk, I felt a myriad of feelings. I went into a complete shame spiral, and not because someone dared to tell me their truth or because I was caught up in a hard moment, but because it was true. It was real. It was something I knew. But I realized in all of those moments as I was processing that I was feeling all kinds of things all at once, and I can only imagine that many of you feel all of this too. I am so unbelievably tired, bone weary, and overwhelmed by what has been the constant need to address the absolute ridiculousness of hate, violence, and greed in this world. I am so disgusted by what we humans do to one another. And I was embarrassed that as this person began talking, and I knew where she was going with her stories and her feedback, I began to cry, and I couldn't stop crying. And it was different. You see, I get feedback all the time, okay? There are 120 of you. Not all of it is good. Lots of people want me to do things in lots of ways. Lots of folks have opinions about what I should or shouldn't do or should or shouldn't say, and that's really okay. Sometimes I agree, sometimes I don't. But in this instance, what was painful is what I said already, that I knew deep down she was right. I had been giving in to my exhaustion and my overwhelm and my hopeless helplessness. And I was just praying that none of you would notice, or at the very least, that you'd be polite enough not to mention it. She pushed me through the doorway that I needed to go through. Because regardless of my exhaustion, people are starving to death. And hospitals are being bombed, and children are dying afraid and alone. Hostages are being held and tortured, and the sanctity of life seemingly means nothing. And I can't help but think about people, these lives, with their one precious life. What are we doing? And I meant what I said to my email and you all this week, and I want to say it again in my voice. My support of an immediate and complete ceasefire is not grounded in any kind of anti-Jewish sentiment. The rise of anti-Semitism is real and scary, and I deeply want Jewish people everywhere to feel safe and valued. And Muslim sentiment is also real and scary, and I deeply want Palestinians and other Muslim people to feel valued and safe. I believe with my whole heart that the majority of people on this planet, regardless of religion or ethnicity, want the same thing. A place to raise their children and live their lives well, in peace. I cannot, nor do I want to make a political statement about who owns the land or who deserves what or who did what to whom and when. Those are important conversations that I am not qualified for. Those arguments are beyond my ability to comprehend, which is part of the reason why it's so much easier to say nothing. What I do know, and again, I want you to hear this in my voice, is that I am anti-violence. I am anti-war. I am anti-genocide, whenever, wherever, however that is happening. I am anti-murdering of children and families and anti-bombing of hospitals. I am anti-hostage-taking and anti-torture. I am pro-peace. I am pro-food and water and fresh, clean air and safe places to live and heal for everyone. It is messy and scary and hard and exhausting to talk about these things, especially when so much of what we know or understand is incomplete or contradictory or just plain too much. And I didn't want to be a mess in front of all of you all these months. I didn't want to share my hopeless helplessness. I didn't want to say, I don't know what to do. I didn't want to say, I'm not actually sure any of it will matter. But in my office that day, I was pushed lovingly through a doorway I'd been hovering on. And what I am sure of, what I have always known, is that even if it doesn't work, even if nothing changes, I don't want to be someone who says nothing. And then I realized as I was writing this service that we are so lucky we have each other. We can buoy one another up when we're tired. We don't have to do it alone. Some of us can rest while others push through until we're ready to push again and they can lay it down. We are more powerful together. And I want the people that are suffering most in the world to know that they're not alone. Maybe we won't stop the violence with our words and our actions, but maybe somehow those who are hurting most will hear and know that there were people all around the globe who cared, who are willing to take a stand, and it will offer some small comfort, some small hope, some small redemption for humanity. The only question is, will we say yes to the doorway that beckons us, and what will that yes look like? Will we cross that threshold into the unknown, but know that it's closer to the world we imagine? Will we loosen our winter mentalities to make room for the flourish of possibilities that awaits us? I know that we are so lucky to be living this brutal and beautiful life with one another. Amen.